The ninth parak starts out with three mishnayos discussing the measuring cups that were used in the Beis HaMikdash for the various items brought with the Korban Mincha. In particular, when it came to the dry measuring cups, so that's going to be Mishnah Aleph, they would use certain measurements to measure out the flour. And thereafter, Mishnah Beis and Gimel will talk about measuring cups that were used for the wet items that were used with the Korban Mincha, for example, the oil and the wine. Mishnah Aleph says as follows, Shtei Mido Shel Yavesh Hayu B'Mikdash. There were two measuring cups, two measures that were used in the Beis HaMikdash to measure dry, talking about the flour used with the Korban Mincha. And the two were as follows, Isaron V'Chetzi Isaron, the size of an Isaron, which was approximately 4 liters, and the size of a Chetzi Isaron. So that would have been 2 liters. And Rabbi Meir disagrees. He says, Rabbi Meir Omer, Isaron, Isaron v'chetzi Isaron. It's not a typo. There was an Isaron, there was an Isaron, and also a half an Isaron. There were 3 types. Now, why does it say Isaron and Isaron? That should be the same measurement. So, in fact, there were 2 types of Isaron. One type of Isaron was called Mechuka, which means that in order to have an Isaron, you filled up the cup and left it level. You didn't heap it. And the other type, in order to have an Isaron, so the second type was smaller, you had to heap it in that measuring cup in order to have a full Isaron. And they had different uses. Typically, for measuring the flour for the Korban Mincha, they used the heaped one. It's a nicer mitzvah to heap up with the flour, heap it up, give it everything you got, so fill it up and even more, so heap it up. And the other one, the level one, the Mechuka one, was used specifically for the Korban Mincha of the Kohen Gadol, which was brought every day. It's called the Minchas Chavitin, because what they had to do was they used to fill up the measuring cup, and then they had to divide it in two. And if they would use the heaped up cup, when they divide it into two, because half was used in the morning and half in the afternoon, then inevitably some would fall off. They'd lose some of the flour. Accordingly, they had a special measurement that required that it held. It was a little bit bigger. It held the entire Isaron, even without having to heap the flour in it. You left it level, and then it was much easier to divide it up into two. So that's Rabbi Meir Shita. There was an Isaron, and Isaron, one was a bigger cup, a smaller cup. One required it to be heaped. That's the smaller one, to heap it in order to have an Isaron. The bigger one, you left it level. And then the third was a Chetzi Isaron. Now we're going to divide up and say, so what was the use of the measuring cup that was the size of an Isaron? And thereafter, we'll discuss what was the use of the measuring cup that was a Chetzi Isaron. Again, we are talking about dry measurements, what was used for dry, in particular the flour for the Korban Mincha. So Isaron Mehaya Mishamesh, so what did they use the Isaron measuring cup for? Shebohaya Modi L'Kol HaMenachos. With that, they would measure all of the flour needs for the Korban Menachos. Now, interestingly, certain Korbanos indeed needed an Isaron, but some needed more. Some needed 2 Isronos, some needed 3 Isronos, but we did not have a measuring cup for 2 Isronos or 3 Isronos. We had only had a measuring cup for 1 Isaron. So if you needed 3 Esronos, you needed 3 of them for a certain Korban, you'd have to use it 3 times. You'd measure out an Isaron, any Isaron and an Isaron, that would be a total of 3. So here the Mishnah explains that. So when it comes to Isaron, Isaron Mehaya Mishamesh, Shabayo Modik L'Kol HaMenachos, it was used for all the Korban Minchas, how much flour, and even though maybe you needed more than Isaron, Lo Haya Moded, Lo B'Shal Shlosh L'Par, we did not use to measure. When you had a par, you needed 3 Esronos. We did not measure out in a measuring cup a full 3 Esronos. In 1 measuring cup, we didn't have a measuring cup with 3 Esronos. Lo B'Shal Shnayim L'Ayil, and when we had a ram to bring, and a ram required the bringing of 2 Esronos of flour, we didn't have a measuring cup to measure out 2 Esronos of flour, Elamodidim Esronos, but rather for all of them, whether they required 1 Isaron or 2 Esronos or 3 Esronos, they would measure it in the single Isaron measuring cup, and sometimes you had to do it 2 times or 3 times, depending on how much mincha, how much flour was necessary for a given type of animal. And how about the second type of the measuring cup, the Chetzi Isaron, Mahaya Mishamish? What did they use that one for? Shebohaya Moded Chavite Kohen Gadol. With that, they would measure out the Korban Mincha of the Kohen Gadol that he brought each and every day. So it started out with the full Isaron, Chetzi Isaron. So they used to have to bring it in a full Isaron, and then they had to divide it in two. And that's what they used the Chetzi Isaron for, to divide it. And half of it, Mechsa Baboker, Umechsa Ben Abayim, half of it was used in the morning when he brought his the part of the Korban Mincha, and half of it was brought in the afternoon. But it was necessary in order to divide it to have a Chetzi Isaron measurement, so they got it exactly right, that half of it would be in the morning and half in the afternoon. Mishnah Beis begins the discussion of the measuring cups in the Beis HaMikdash that were used for wet items, for example, for wine and oil used with the Korban Mincha. And the Tana Kama, we're going to have three views. The Tana Kama tells us that he had a Mesorah, that there were actually seven, Sheva Midos Shalach Hayu BaMikdash, there were seven different measurements, and accordingly, seven different sized measuring cups to the Beis HaMikdash used for liquids. And he lists them as follows. And before we go through the list, just a little bit on the math. A hin, a single hin, that's a measurement, is equal to 12 lug. 12 lug. One hin is equal to 12 lug. What's a lug? So a lug is a volume of six eggs. That's approximately between 16 and 21 fluid ounces. So again, one hin is equal to 12 lug. And when it comes to a lug, that's equal to the volume of six eggs. So here we have our list of seven measuring cups for liquids in the Beis HaMikdash, a hin, and a half a hin. That's a chetzi a hin, that's number two. Number three is a shlishi, say a third of a hin. Urevi a hin, that's number four. Number five is a lug. Number six, the chetzi lug, a half a lug. And number seven is a revis, a lug, that is a quarter of a lug. So there we have in the seven of them, four of them are based on the hins, and three of them are based on lugs, but those are convertible back and forth as well. So that is the Tana Kama. There were seven total. Rebbe Eliezer Bar Tzadok did not have that Mesorah, that there were seven measurements in the Beis HaMikdash, seven measuring cups, sizes of measuring cups in the Beis HaMikdash. Rather, he says as follows, instead of having a hin, and a half hin, and a third hin, and a fourth hin, they used to have, in fact, a measuring cup the size of a hin, and they simply had markings in it, notches like our measuring cup. So if you want four cups, you have a four-cup measuring cup, so it's also marked with markings where would be one cup and two cups and three cups and four cups and half a cup and a third a cup and a quarter a cup. The same thing, Lahavdil, in the Beis HaMikdash, he says, Rabbi Eliezer Bar Tzadok, Shnasos Hayu Behin, you had the hin, the measuring cup of a hin, but it had markings for it, and it told you, Ad Kan Lapar, for a par, you would need a half a hin. So it had a marking at a half a hin, and ad kan la'ayil, and for the ayil, you would need a third of a hin, for example, of oil. So it had that marking on the hin measuring cup where a third of a hin was, and ad kan la'kevis, if you require a quarter for a kevis, which you did, a quarter of oil, so it had a marking on it. So that gets rid of three of the measuring cups, and in fact, some of the Mefarshim explain that he had the same view when it came to the lug. What do you need? A full lug and a half a lug and a quarter of a lug. In fact, they only had a lug and they had markings. So Rebbe Eliezer Bar Tzadok, in the end of the day, would say they only had two measuring cups. One was a hin and one was a lug, and they had markings in each of them so you could find exactly what measurement and measure exactly how much oil and how much wine was necessary. The third opinion, Rabbi Shimon Omer, he agrees with the Tana Kama that there was a Mesorah, that there were seven measuring cups for liquids in the Beis HaMikdash, but lo hayasham hin, the amount of a hin, that was not necessary. Historically, Moshe Rabbeinu needed a hin for something, but that was not something that was necessary for the ongoing needs of the Beis HaMikdash. So there was not a hin. So what did he do to replace that hin with something else, another measuring cup? V'chimeh haya hin meshamesh. So he says, what do we need a hin for? There was no need for a hin, but rather the seventh one was not a hin, but he says, Elamida Yesera Shalug Omechsa. There was actually a mida, there was a measurement, an additional measurement that was a lug and a half. So what did they use a lug and a half for? Because when it came to the daily Minchas Chavitin, that's the daily Korban Mincha that was brought by the Kohen Gadol, he needed to bring of it three log of shemen, three lug of oil for the whole day, but it was a divided half in the morning and half in the afternoon. So they needed a measurement to measure half of the three lug, which is a lug and a half. So he says as follows, Mida Yisera, there was an additional one, Shabog Gumechsa, and it was the size of 1.5 lug, Haisa Shaba, Hayamoded, the Minchas Kohen Gadol. And with that, they would measure the Korban Minchas Chavitin of the Kohen Gadol each and every day, Logo Mechsa Baboker, and there was 1.5 log of the oil was used in the morning for Logo Mechsa Ben Abayim. Another, the second log and a half, was used in the afternoon. Mishnah Gimel is a continuation of the prior Mishnah, where we said that there are 7 different measuring cups used in the Beis HaMikdash, and now we are going to discuss what the functions of each of them it was in the Beis HaMikdash, with the exception of the Hin that, as we discussed before, that was used by Moshe Rabbeinu in the Midbar, but had no ongoing use. So we're going to discuss 6 of the 7. Mishnah Gimel says as follows, and we're going to go in reverse order from what we saw in the prior Mishnah. The prior Mishnah went from the largest to smallest. We're going to go from the smallest to the largest now. Mishnah Gimel, Revi'is. A Revi'is is a quarter of a lug. What was its use in the Beis HaMikdash? It was used for 2 things. Revi'is mayim lemetzora, when the metzora was going through its purification process. As part of that, a revi'is, a quarter of a lug of water was necessary. So the quarter lug was used for measuring that. Revi'is shemen lenazir. And the nazir, when he completes his term, he also required to be brought with the loaves of bread he had. He had to bring a quarter of a lug of oil. So the quarter of a lug was used for that as well. Chetzi lug, mehaya meshamesh. We're on to the next measurement. A half a lug, what was its use? So it had a couple of uses. Chetzi lug mayim lesota. The sota, the suspected woman who was required to drink of the bitter water. So the chetzi lug was the amount that was necessary, and it measured out the water for her to be drinking it, for it to be drunk. The chetzi lug shemen latoden, also the chetzi lug was also used with the korban toda. There were 40 loaves of bread that were brought, loaves or wafers that were brought with the toda. 30 of them were matzah, non-leavened. So with those 30 matzah loaves, it required a chetzi lug of shemen, of oil as well. Measurement number three, going up in size, the lug. The full lug, what was its use? Hayamode l'chol ha-menachos. The default, when you had a korban mincha, for every isaron of flour, you had to bring 1 lug of oil. So whatever the size of the isaron, no matter, regardless of how many esronos you had, if it was 1 or more, you would use the lug and you would measure. So for each isaron, you would measure 1 lug of shemen. Afilu mincha shel shishim isaron nosen la shishim lug. Even if you had a korba mincha that required 60 esronos of flour, you would measure out 60 lug one by one, because we used the lug measurement. So we would measure out 60 lug of shemen, so we'd have that kli and use it 60 times, so we would get 60 lug. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, he disagreed. Afilu mincha shel shishim isaron, even if you had that massively large korban mincha and you needed 60 isaron of flour, you would not bring a lug for each isaron, but rather you would just bring 1 lug for the entire korban mincha. For all 60 isaron, you would bring only 1 lug of oil, ein la ela luga, the 1 single lug. Shenemar, he brings a pasuk, lemincha the lug shemen. For the entire mincha, you would have only 1 lug of oil. So 1 lug of oil for the entire korban mincha, regardless of how much flour it had in it. Now we're going on to number 4, size number 4 of measuring cups in the Beis HaMikdash. Shisha, they had 6 lug. That 6 lug we didn't mention in the prior Mishnah, that's the same as a half a hin. That's a chetzi hin. So that was used for lapar, when there was an offering of a par for an ox. So they had to bring along with it that amount of the nesachim, that would be the oil and wine for the bowl. And arba al ayil, they required the 4 lug measurement, and that's actually the equal to a third of a hin. So that was necessary for measuring the nesachim, oil and wine, of a ram. And also shlosh al akeves, the 3 lug measurement, that was 3 lug is equal to a quarter of a hin. and that was used for the nesachim of a keves, which is a lamb. So we've listed out six now of the measuring cups, and again, the seventh one was the hin that was only used by Moshe Rabbeinu. It had no ongoing use in the Beis Hamikdash. Now we have an additional comment appended to this Mishnah. There was another amount of oil that was necessary for which the chetzi lug was used to measure it. The Mishnah completes as follows: Shlosho mechsa la menorah. When it came to the menorah, for each day to light it, it required 3.5 lug. And as we know, there were 7 different branches on it. So that comes out to mechetzi lug l'kol ner, each and every one of the branches, each ner, each candle that was lit, it required 0.5 lug. So they used the chetzi lug amount in order to measure it. This is, they needed it 7 times. So they had 7.5 lugs for the entire amount of oil necessary for the menorah of 3.5 lug. Mishnah Dalit is a somewhat complicated Mishnah. It looks short, it looks innocent, but it is complicated. We're going to take the approach of the Bar Tanura in explaining it. It's not going to be like the Gemara itself, and this requires a little bit background. So when somebody brings an animal offering, oftentimes it is accompanied by a two-component mincha offering. It's actually called the Nesachim. The Nesachim is the additional items that are brought with an animal offering, and there are actually two components. Component number one is called the Minchas Nesachim, which is a mixture of flour and oil. And the second component is wine. Wine is brought along as well. So those are the two components. Number one, again, is Minchas Nesachim, the mixture of flour with oil, and number two is wine. And the question that we're going to grapple with, if somebody has a couple korbanos that he's bringing, you have multiple korbanos, are you permitted to combine the nesachim together or not? We will explain that in a little bit more detail shortly, but before we do that, what we're going to have to do is explain that when somebody brings a korban, and the korban has to as well be accompanied by these nesachim, and the Bar Tanura says we're specifically talking about the minchas nesachim in the reish of our Mishnah, and the Seifa as well. He says we're talking about when you have the flour and oil mixture, are we allowed to combine the flour and oil from one korban with the flour and the oil of another korban? And he says, as he reads this Mishnah, it depends. It depends, is the ratio of the oil to flour in one korban, in korban number one, the same as the oil to flour ratio in korban number two? And if that is the case, then we can mix it all together, and that is not going to be a problem. However, if the oil to flour ratio is not going to be the same with korban 1 and korban 2, then we cannot mix it all together. And just to give a little bit more information on that, because it's going to be necessary for our Mishnah, when somebody brings an animal offering, that's a par. A par is a bull. So in association with that bull, the minchas nesachim that have to be brought along, that is the flour and oil, you need to bring 3 isaron of flour and 6 lug of oil. So 6 lug of oil, 3 isaron of flour. That has a ratio, an oil to flour ratio of 2:1. The same thing with an ayil. When somebody's bringing an ayil, a ram, there are different gross amounts of oil and flour, but the ratio of them, the ratio of the oil and flour is going to be 2:1 as well. So when it comes to that ayil, that ram, you have to bring 4 lug of oil and 2 isaron of flour. So it's not the same numbers as when somebody brings a par, but the ratio is still going to be 2:1. And what we'll see then is you can mix those ingredients. I can throw it all together. I don't have, if I have korban number one is a par, korban number two is an ayil, I can throw everything together in a big mixing bowl and mix it all together. I don't have to mix the par separately and the ayil separately. When we're talking about mixing, we're talking about the oil and flour. Because the ratios of the oil to flour are the same, I can mix all the raw ingredients from the par and all the raw ingredients for the ayil together, throw all the oil, all the flour together in one bowl, not a problem. However, when it comes to a keves, which is a lamb offering, that has a different ratio. It requires 3 lug of oil and 1 isaron of flour. So that's a ratio not of 2:1, but 3:1. So I cannot mix those raw ingredients, the flour and oil, from the lamb together with either the bull or the ram. And now we'll see that inside Mishnah Dal in Ma'arvin Niske Karim B'Niske Elim. If I have the Nesachim, which is according to the Bartanura, that's the oil and the flour from a car, from a bull offering. And I also have the same thing. I have the oil and the flour, and they haven't been mixed together yet, from an aisle. From a ram. So I have a bull offering and a ram offering. You're allowed to mix all those raw ingredients together because they have the same oil to flour ratio. However, or actually the same thing applies, niske kvasim, beniske kvasim, if I have a lamb offering and another lamb offering, because they're going to have the same ratio of 3-1, I can mix the raw ingredients together. And that is the case even at shel yachid b'shel tzibur, even if one korban is from an individual bringing it, and the other one is from a tzibur, the community bringing it. It doesn't matter, as long as you have the same oil to flour ratio, they can be mixed together. Shel yom b'shel emesh, and even if one of the animals was brought today and the other one was brought tomorrow, different days, I can still combine the nesachim because I don't have to bring the nesachim. I don't have to bring the oil and flour on the same day as I bring the animal. So, because despite the fact that I brought animal one yesterday and I'm bringing animal two today, I can, if as long as I didn't bring the nesachim of animal number one yesterday, I can now today combine all of the flour and oil together from two different karbanos that were brought on two different days, not a problem. However, what you cannot do is aval ein ma'arvin niske kvasim beniske parim ve'elim. What you cannot do is you cannot combine the flour and the oil from the lamb together with either that of the ram or the bull, because again, the lamb has a ratio of oil to flour of 3-1, and the ram, and each of the ram and the bull have a 2-1 ratio. So the lamb cannot be mixed in with the other. You can't take those raw ingredients, throw them all together in a bowl, and mix them. Continuing, vim bilalan elu bifnei asman ve'elu bifnei asman v'nis arvu ksherin. On the other hand, even if they have different ratios, so for example, the keves, the lamb, has a 3-1 ratio, and what I did first was I mixed the oil and flour of that lamb together. And I also had another korban, either a bull or a ram, and I mixed the flour and oil of that together, independent of the keves, independent of the lamb. Now, I'd simply have two doughs. I don't have the raw ingredients of the oil and flour, but I have two doughs, even though they have different ratios. Because I already mixed those doughs separately, I can now, if they got mixed in together, even if they have separate ratios, it's still going to be kosher, not going to be a problem. Im anshelo balal, however, if they got mixed together, if the raw ingredients of korbanos that have different ratios got mixed in before I made the dough for each separately, that is when it is going to be puzzle. That's what's going to invalidate the korban. And continuing, just a side point, but a related side point, hakeves haba im haomer. When it comes to the regular keves, we went through the ratio that a normal keves requires 3 lug of oil, 1 isaron of flour. That's a ratio of 3-1. However, the keves, the lamb that comes with the korban omer, which is brought on the second day of Pesach, afal pishemin chasop kfula. Even though this keves, even though this lamb has the mincha, means the flour component is double. It's 2 isaron relative to the normal keves, to the normal lamb that only has 1 isaron. Despite that, we do not double the oil component. It's still going to have only 3 lug like the normal keves. So we are doubling the flour component. We are not doubling the oil component of this keves that is brought on the second day of Pesach. So once again, in the text of the Mishnah, hakeves haba ima omer, the keves, the lamb that is brought with the korban haomer, second day of Pesach, hafal pisha min chasok fula, even though we are doubling the amount of the flour to 2 isaron instead of 1. Lo hayu nesach kfulin, the nesachim component, that's the other items that were brought, the wine and the shemen. We haven't mentioned wine, but the same thing would apply to the wine. That also would maintain its same amount as the normal kvasim that were brought. Just to mention that the Gemara reads the ratio very differently. It's not talking about, according to the Gemara, like the Bartanura, the Bartanura's of the view, it's talking about the ratios of the oil to flour, and that's what we're talking about mixing together. The Gemara says it's all talking about the wine component of the korbanos and not the oil and flour components of the korbanos. Mishnah Hey builds on what we saw in the first three Mishnayos in this perek, where we were discussing the measuring cups, both measuring cups for dry and liquid items in the Beis HaMikdash. And the beginning of the Mishnah is going to be the opinion of Rebbe Meir from Mishnah Aleph, who told us that there were two separate measuring cups for the Isaron, for the flour amounts, and the default was the smaller measuring cup, and that what they used to do was that they would heap it up, and that was used for measuring all of the Isaron measurements that were necessary for the Korban Minchas, with the exception of the Korban Mincha that was brought daily by the Kohen Gadol. That had a larger measuring cup. It also required an Isaron of flour, but they didn't used to heap it up. They used to have the heaping amount that they would have otherwise had, because we now have a somewhat larger measuring cup to have an Isaron. That heaped up amount was inside the larger cup, because you don't want to heap up the measuring cup, the Isaron of the Kohen Gadol necessary for his daily mincha offering, because it was divided in two, and if you would heap it up, you would lose some of the flour. So that's the beginning of the Mishnah as follows: Kol Amidosh Hayu BaMikdash, all the measuring cups that were in the base of Mikdash, Hayu Nigdashot. What they would do is they would heap it. They would heap the measuring cups a little bit more, heap it on top of the brim, with the exception, Chutz Mishal Kohen Gadol Shaya Gadol L'Socha, the exception of the Isaron of the Kohen Gadol for his Korban Mincha, that the heaped up amount was inside of it, because it was a somewhat larger measuring cup for the Isaron of flour. Now we're going to get into a three-way machlokas, and it's going to be interesting. It's not a machlokas as to what the halacha is. It's going to be a machlokas as to the reason for the halacha. And we'll just start with the halacha as follows. There is a discussion now of the overflow amount, the heaped amount on top of the measuring cups. And we're going to talk both about measuring cups for liquid, and liquid would be for the oil and the wine, and for the dry measuring cups for the flour. And if you have that heaped up amount, all three of the Tanaim we're about to see will agree that if it's a liquid amount, then the heaped up amount on top of the brim will be sanctified. It will be kadosh. How do you have liquid that goes over the brim? Because you have the surface tension. When you pour extra liquid over the brim, the surface tension will keep some of it there. So that, indeed, that extra amount will be kadosh, even though it's strictly speaking not inside the kli. However, when it comes to a dry measuring cup, the additional amount that is heaped up will not be kadosh. And the machlokas we're going to see now is the reason for the distinction between the liquid being kadosh, the heaped up liquid, and the dry flour heaped up not being kadosh. So the Tana Kama is as follows: Midos halach, when we have the midos, the measuring cup for the wet items, that is for the wine and the oil, Beirutzei and Kodesh, the heaped up amount is Kodesh. And the rationale by the Tana Kama is as follows: not only is the inside of the Kli Kodesh, it has been anointed with the Shemen HaMishcha, the special anointing oil, but also the outside of the Kli has been anointed as well. And accordingly, when you have a heaped up amount that is not inside the Kli, it is considered to be leaning on the outside of the kli. And the reason for that is the brim is considered to be part of the outside of the kli. So when we have it heaped up, if we have a liquid heaped up, it's leaning on the brim. The brim is part of the outside of the kli, but the outside of the kli has been sanctified as well. Accordingly, that heaped up liquid, that excess amount, is going to be sanctified as well. On the other hand, umidas hayavesh, when it comes to the dry measuring cups, Beirut saying, hold, the excess heaped up amount is not going to be sanctified. And the reason is because when you had the dry measuring cups, only the inside of the kli was sanctified, not the outside of the kli. So anything heaped up is leaning on the outside of the kli, it's leaning on the brim, and accordingly, it's not considered kadosh. So that's the rationale by the Tana Kama, why we have the distinction in the heaped up amount. Liquid is kadosh, dry is not kadosh, and it's because the outside of the kli of a dry measuring cup is not been sanctified, accordingly the heaped up amount is not going to be sanctified. Now we're moving on to opinion number two, Rabbi Akiva Omer. He is of the view, he agrees with the Tana Kama when it comes to midos halach yav kodesh, when it comes to the mid halach, the measuring cups for the dry, both the inside and the outside of those kalim are kodesh. Accordingly, the heaped up amount is going to be kodesh as well, because it's leaning on the brim, which is part of the outside of the kli. Lefichach beirutzeim kodesh. Accordingly, because both the inside and the outside of the measuring cup, the wet measuring cup is sanctified, accordingly the heaped up amount is kodesh as well. However, where he disagrees is when it comes to the dry measuring cup, umidos hayavesh chol. Where he disagrees is that even the inside of the dry measuring cups are going to be not sanctified. This is the Tana Kama said the inside is, the outside isn't. This is Rabbi Akiva saying not only is the outside not sanctified, the inside is not sanctified as well. Lefichach beirutzeim chol. Accordingly, the excess amount is not going to be kodesh. There are different ways it became sanctifying by saying this is sanctifying. So the person bringing the korban would say the amount is sanctified. He would only have in mind the amounts inside the kli, not the outside of the kli. So accordingly, according to Rabbi Akiva, it agrees with the halacha, but for the different rationale. And Rabbi Yossi Omer, number three, Rabbi Yossi is of the view, lo mishum ze, I disagree with the reasons above. I agree with the halacha. The excess heaped amount of liquid is going to be kodesh. The dry is not going to be kodesh. But why? He was of the view that only the insides of the kelim are kodesh. Even for the wet, even for the liquid measurements, it wasn't the outside that was kodesh in addition to the inside, but only the inside. So he explains as follows. So why would then be the case, if it's only the inside that's kodesh for both of the kelim, why would ever the liquid excess, the heaped up excess, why would that become kodesh? So he explains as follows. Ela shahalach ne'akar, when you pour something that's liquid into a kli, it's not that what you pour on top, the heaped amount stays on top. Everything gets mixed together. So when you pour liquid in, the stuff comes from the bottom, goes to the top, top goes to the bottom. Accordingly, because the heaped up amount was originally inside the kli itself, and now it's on top of the kli, it became sanctified. And that's why when you pour into a lach, into a liquid kli, it's not only what's in the kli is kadosh, but also the heaped up amount is going to be kadosh. But when it becomes v'hayavesh einu nekar, when it comes to a dry, you never have that the flour on the bottom comes to the top. It just lies in the bottom, and whatever you put on the top is never entered the kli. That maintains itself on top of the kli, and because all kalim, we only sanctify the inside, not the outside, that's why we have the distinction between lach and yavesh. Again, because of Rabbi Osi, he was of the view that the kalim, all the kalim, whether it was dry or liquid, on the inside was sanctified. Then the difference is because when you pour a liquid, the liquid was inside and now it's on the heaped up area, so that was in the kli, that's why the heaped up amount is kadosh. But when it comes to the flour never was in the kli, it only stayed on top when it was poured after everything else filled the kli, and accordingly, the flour in the heaped up area is not going to be sanctified. Mishnah Vav is coming to clarify that in a number of locations in our Mishnah, a number of places, we have mentioned that when you bring a korban, you bring an animal offering, and it has to be accompanied with nesachim. And we explained even just recently, a couple of Mishnayos ago, what the nesachim is it has two components. It has the mincha component, that is the flour and oil component, and also it has the wine component. And now we're going to explain which korbanos need those accompanying nesachim, need the additional, the mincha and the wine together, and which do not need the nesachim. So the Mishnah says as follows, kol korbanos hatzibur vehayachid teunim nesachim. That's a blanket statement. We'll have exceptions shortly. Blanket statement that all korbanos that are brought on behalf of the tzibur, the klal, and an individual that brings a korban, they all require the accompanying nesachim, the mincha and the wine with the korban, with the five following exceptions. Chutz, min habechor, that is the oldest animal that is brought as a korban. V'hama'aser, that's ma'aser behema, the tithing of our animals on an annual basis. V'hapesach, the korban pesach. Number four is the chatas. V'ha'asham is number five. So all five of those do not require nesachim. Just the animal was brought without the additional mincha and the wine. However, We also have an exception to the exception. Ela shechataso shel mitzora ba'ashamo teunim nesachim. When it comes to the chatas and asham, it's not a blanket statement that it never requires nesachim, but rather when you have a mitzora, part of the mitzora purification process is bringing a chatas and an asham, even though the typical chatas and asham do not require nesachim, but for the mitzora, they would require Nesachim together with the Chatas, each of the Chatas and the Asham. Mishnah Zayin will follow the template that we just saw in the prior Mishnah, but it's going to teach us not about the Nesachim that are brought with the Korbanos, but who has to do Smicha when Smicha is required on a Korban. What's Smicha? So for many of the animals that were brought as Korbanos, there was a halacha that the person who brings the animal has to do Smicha, lean on the head of the animal with all of his weight. So you'd put your hands on the head of the animal and then lean down upon it. So the Mishnah is going to tell us when smicha needs to be done, which korbanos needs to be done, and when is it not done. Kol korbanos hatzibur ein behem smicha. All communal korbanos, that's a korban of the tzibur, do not have smicha, with two exceptions. Chutz min apar haba'a kol ha-mitzvos. This is also called the par helam davar shel tzibur. And what this is under certain circumstances when the Sanhedrin made a mistake in a judgment and they permitted something for certain types of averas, the type that if somebody violates it on purpose, they would receive kares, and if they did it by accident, they would have to bring a korban chatas. But the Sanhedrin said something was mutter, and the majority of people acted upon it, and then they figured out they made a mistake, the Sanhedrin would have to bring a par haba'a kol ha-mitzvos. That's a certain par, an ox that had to be brought because they made this mistake. So this is an exception to the rule that smicha would be required. And also on Yom Kippur, the sa'ir ha-meshtaleach, that's the he-goat that was sent out to the desert to be thrown over the cliff. Rabbi Shimon Omer, he adds a third one, that even though it's a korban tzibur, it would require smicha. Al siyirei avodah zarah. This is very similar to the first one we brought, the par haba kol ha-mitzvos, also called the par helam davar. Again, the Sanhedrin made a mistake, but they made a mistake in something that related to avodah zarah. They said it was permitted, and they figured out there afterward it was prohibited. So here they would bring a seir, a he-goat, a goat, and it would also require smicha. Now continuing, kol korbanos hayachi teunin smicha, the converse. We just talked about the korbanos of a tzibur. Now we're talking about the korbanos of a yachid, of an individual bringing a korban. All of them would require smicha by the person bringing it, with three exceptions. Chutz min habechor, the bechor is the firstborn animal. V'hamaser, when somebody is taking maaser behema, tithing his animals. V'hapesach, the korban pesach, those three would not require smicha, but all other korbanos brought by individuals would require smicha. And now we also have another statement, when somebody committed to bring a korban. He said, I'm going to bring a korban ola, I'm going to bring a korban shlamim, and passed away before doing so, but there's still that commitment there. B'hayoresh somech, so the yoresh, his heir, is going to bring that korban on his behalf, the person who passed away, and will do the smicha. Typically, it can only be the owner of the korban who does the smicha. Here, the heir is going to step into his shoes and will be able to do the smicha, umevi nesachim, and also will be responsible to bring the nesachim, whatever is required for that type of korban, the flour, the wine, oil, etc. Whatever is necessary, he will be bring the nesachim. And also, there's a halacha called a tmura. Tmura means a substitute, and if the owner of a korban, not other people, but if the owner of a korban has designated a korban, and he tries to replace it with a different animal. So he tries to replace animal one, which already he is designated for bringing, for example, a shlamin, and he says, I'm going to bring number two in its stead. The pasuk tells us that he can't do that, and they both are now required to be brought as korbanos. They both have the status of a korban. You try to transfer from one to two, they both become a korban. So to here, if we have that yoresh, that heir of the person who passed away, and he tries to make a tmura, they are both going to become korbanos. and that is contrasting with anyone else who tries to do this, the substitution. For example, somebody who's not an heir, not the owner of a korban, but tries to substitute somebody else's korban, that's not going to be effective. The number one animal is going to still be the korban. Number two will not become a korban. But when you have this power, it's not only the owner of the korban, but also the yoresh, that heir as well, who makes an attempt to substitute, they will both become korbanos. They will both become owned by the Beis HaMikdash and be brought as korbanos. Mishnah Ches continues discussing the halachas of smicha. Kol somchim, everyone can do smicha on their own korbanos. Chutz mecheirish shota v'katan, with the exception of a cheirish, who's somebody who is a deaf mute, a shota, somebody who is mentally incapable. He is a deranged individual, v'katan, and a katan, somebody below the age of bar mitzvah. They cannot do otherwise. Smicha can be done. Suma, ve'oved, kochavim. These are other exceptions to the rule of everyone can do the smicha. Somebody who is blind, a non-Jew, when they are bringing their own karbanos, it would be brought without doing smicha. And in addition, somebody has to do smicha by themselves. You typically can appoint a shaliach to act in your stead, but that is not the case with smicha. So the Mishnah tells us, va'eved, if you wanted your eved kanani, hashaliach, or to appoint a shaliach, somebody to act as your representative, va'isha, your wife, your own wife, it is not going to be effective when it comes to smicha. Smicha has to be done by the individual bringing the korban. It cannot be outsourced even to your own eved, even to a shaliach, specially designated even to one's wife. Now the Mishnah is going to continue. How about if smicha is not done? It's the type of korban that smicha is supposed to be done, but what if it's not done? Is that going to be preventing the validity of the korban? Usmicha shiare mitzvah. Smicha is called shiare mitzvah. It's a remainder of a mitzvah. It's not a mitzvah in of itself. What this is telling us is that the korban is going to be valid even in the absence of smicha. It's not going to be ideal, but it is still going to be valid in the absence of doing the smicha. How is the smicha done? Al harosh, it is done on the head of the animal, b'shtei yadayim, with somebody's hands, both hands leaning on the head of the animal. Put all your weight on it and lean. And where is it done in the Beis HaMikdash? It's done in the chatzar, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Uvamakam shesomchim shochtin. The place that you do the smicha is you do the shchita. Shchita has to be done in the azara of the Beis HaMikdash, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. So too, the smicha has to be done there. And the reason is v'tekef, the smicha shchita, you have to do them back to back. Right after you do the smicha, you have to have the shchita. So accordingly, because the shchita has to be done in the chatzar, the Beis HaMikdash, you need to do the smicha right there as well, because they have to be done consecutively right after one another, and they're both going to be done accordingly in the chatzar, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Mishnah Tes is building on what we just learned about the smicha, leaning on the head of an animal, and it's also going to build on what we saw back in the fifth parak, talking about the halachas of tnufa, which is waving of certain korbanos. And what we're going to do is we're going to compare and contrast. We're actually going to contrast more than compare these two halachas of smicha and tnufa. So the Mishnah says as follows, chomer besmicha mitnufa. Sometimes we are more stringent when it comes to smicha, the halachas of leaning on the korban, relative to the shaking, the waving of the korban, and this reverse as well, ubitnufa mibismicha. Sometimes we are going to be more strict when it comes to tnufa relative to smicha. And we're going to now explain what that means. And first, we're going to explain when we are stricter when it comes to smicha relative to smucha, to tnufa. She'achan meinif l'kol ha'chaverim. If we have a korban that there are a number of partners on it, so it's like a syndicated korban, a bunch of people get together on a korban. One person, if it's the type of korban that requires the tnufa, one person can be do it on behalf of all of them. But that contrasts with the smicha vein echad somech l'kol ha'chaverim. If we have a group of people together on a korban that requires smicha, one cannot do it for everyone, but rather each person who is part of that korban has to consecutively do the smicha, the leaning on the head of that korban. So that is when we are stricter when it comes to smicha relative to tnufa. Now we're going to see the reverse, v'chomer b'tnufa. There are times that we are stricter when it comes to tenufa, and we're going to see that the tenufa has much more applicability in certain circumstances relative to smicha. That smicha wouldn't be done as follows: shatenufa noheget bekorbanas hayachid vekorbanas tzibur. The tenufa applies both when it comes to korbanas yachid and korbanas tzibur. It doesn't mean that every single korban yachid and every single korban tzibur has tenufa, but it applies in both of those categories in certain circumstances. Says bechayim ubishchutin, and also tnufa can apply to live animals, and also after an animal has been shechted. For example, a korban shlamim, there's certain parts of the animal that have to be waved as well, and tnufa applies bedavar sheyesh bo ruach chayim ubedavar shein bo ruach chayim. It applies to live animals or shechted animals. It applies to animals in general, the category of animals, and also things that don't have life in them. For example, a korban mincha, certain times require tenufa as well. So those are the chomer b'tenufa. We are strict in all those because the tenufa applies in all those categories we just mentioned. Masha enkein b'smicha. In contrast, when it comes to smicha, that smicha only applies to animals, and it only applies when those animals are alive, and it almost only exclusively applies to korbanos that are of a yachid, not to korbanos hatzibur, with minor exceptions. So we see here the stringency of tenufa that applies in many other circumstances that the smicha does not apply.